Hi, welcome. I'm Dr. Roger Murphy, and I'm the host of Freedom from Fibromyalgia. I've got Dr. Sharon Steels here. Dr. Steels is a naturopathic physician in Tempe, Arizona, and she specializes in European biological medicine. So I picked her brain about that once before on a summit or a podcast. I can't remember. We've had the opportunity to interview each other a couple of times now, and I've always enjoyed our conversations, but I really want to pick her brain about European biological medicine, and we're going to have a conversation about how she would approach someone with fibromyalgia, including some of the things that you've heard on the summit that we've really not gone into a lot of detail about, detoxing the lymphatic system. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today as well. So Sharon, thank you for being here. Welcome. I'm so glad to get an opportunity to spend some time with you.
Thank you. Yes, great to be here and chat with you again. And I know it's like, was it a summit? Was it a podcast? We're so busy trying to spread the word and educate people. It all starts to get
exactly. It does. Yeah. You know, it's good to have the opportunity to be able to get your message out. And you know, this is one way to do it on a summit or one of the podcasts we've been on. Well, tell me, first of all, I want to know a little bit about share about European biological medicine, because that's something different. People don't really know what that is. So can you talk a little bit about that?
I would love to. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. So I am a naturopathic physician, but when I went to medical school a long, long time ago, back in the late 90s, I was very fortunate to get introduced to physicians from Switzerland and Germany who were doing holistic medicine, naturopathic medicine of Europe. And so it's called European biological or bioregulatory medicine. And it is something that I became very passionate about because I saw that they were doing a lot of stuff that was deeper and on different levels that worked so much better than just naturopathic medicine or functional medicine. And so I took my naturopathic, my functional, my European, and kind of mashed it all together to come up with what gives me a very comprehensive approach to helping someone who maybe isn't getting the help they need. And so one of the first things with European bioregulatory medicine, which I'm happy to say I see has become more available and more talked about in the alternative worlds in the States, is bioregulatory or biological dentistry. And so this was something that I learned about back in the late 90s, and it just wasn't really talked about in our circles as much. And so dentistry is such an important problem. And if you're dealing with fibromyalgia, you're thinking, what does my mouth have to do with the aching pain and the fatigue and brain fog and everything that I'm going through? But the mouth is so central to everything we experience in our body, so much so that the clinic I was associated with in Switzerland, when I would take a patient over there, the patient would go see the biological dentist first, and the dentist and the doctor were under the same roof. And the reason for that, well, one, the physician was like, I want to have good results. And if my patient doesn't get their mouth cleaned up, it's going to be much harder to get the good results I'm looking for. And two, that there are so many focal infections or blockages that occur in the mouth. And so from a European bioregulatory medicine perspective, we're not just diving in and saying, let's see what nutrients you're deficient in, or let's see what's going on in your gut or your food sensitivities. We're taking this real global look at a human being in a physical body. And we're saying, first of all, we have to open the field. We have to open the terrain. We have to allow flow. So we are setting up the field, the soil, if you may, for healing to occur. And so we're looking at blockages. What is blocking regulation of the nervous system? What is keeping someone stuck in sympathetic mode rather than being able to flow back and forth between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system? And so the mouth, whether it be amalgam fillings, whether it be just simply gum disease, whether it be root canals, whether it be cavitations, which are infections in the bone, or galvanic currents, which means you have a lot of different metals in your mouth and it's setting up electrical currents in your mouth. And so looking there is often a huge correlation between issues going on there. Most people, not all, but most, I always do like a little yip, yip, hooray when someone comes in and they're like, I have no root canals. I've never had fillings, or I've had fillings, but they were properly removed. Because I think a lot of us, as we're on this journey, we look at, we find out, oh, putting mercury in amalgam, silver in your mouth is not a good idea. And so we go and get it taken out. And many people go to their family dentist who means well and just drills it out and doesn't protect them, doesn't prep them, doesn't do aftercare. And so they have them improperly removed. And it's better to not have them removed, which sounds crazy, but it's better to not have them removed, have them improperly removed. And then one thing I just like to say, because I see this a lot in my practice, is once you've had them removed, and hopefully they've been properly removed, it's really important to then follow up with a pre and post urinary test of your heavy metals, because you've removed a source, dripping mercury, toxic mercury into your system, but it's been doing that for a while, and there's always a body burden. And so often the first step is releasing and getting rid of the source, but then you have to go in and do cleanup. And I have seen a lot of patients come in who've never had that second step. They've just had the amalgams removed, but you got to go in and then take care of the body. So one thing, and I could talk about dentistry forever, so I'll kind of keep moving, but dentistry is a huge part that we are always looking at. It's not an afterthought. It's not, well, we've done everything. We've done your food sensitivities. We've balanced your hormones. Maybe it's your teeth. It's kind of like, no, we're going to look at your teeth first and foremost, and we're going to get that handled because it's going to take a big load off of your body. Then we're looking at energetics. And so we're looking at the energy between the cells and biophoton communication and light and sound. We're looking at the extracellular matrix, which to me is where disease and health begins and ends. So again, we're not so focused on the cell. I mean, yes, we get focused on the cell, but before we focus on the cell, we focus on the environment or the house where the cell lives. And so this is the, you might have heard it referred to as ground stuff, substance, or the internal milieu, the extracellular space, the extracellular matrix. There's lots of terms for it, but it's basically, if you think of all your cells in your body, they're floating in a soup pot. And so we are looking at the soup pot, which often gets overlooked. This is a real central tenet of European bioregulatory medicine, that the matrix has to be moving, it has to be flowing, the fascia has to be flowing, the lymphatic system needs to be flowing, the pH needs to be regulated, we need to be mineralized, we need to be in an alkaline state, we need to be thinking properly. And so I spend a lot of time focusing there and making sure that good things can get in. Because for instance, if you take some CoQ10 and you want to feed your cells and your mitochondria, but the highway, the extracellular matrix is blocked, there's a traffic jam, there's a truck overturn, then whatever you're taking in is not going to get to that receptor site. It's not going to be taken in. It's not going to be utilized. And then on the flip side, when the cell has waste products it needs to excrete, it needs to excrete into the lymphatic system, which is kind of like the garbage disposal, right. And it needs to be able to gotten out and put to the curb.
Right. So two main things, I think they're really kind of different than what we'd see in even in functional medicine and westernized functional medicine. The one thing is this whole start with the oral cavity. Start here in the mouth. And we've looked, you know, studies had been out for, I've been in practice 32 years, and I remember 30 years ago seeing research showing that the bacteria in your mouth can create inflammation in the body, and it's associated with heart attack and stroke. Now, the dentist took, you know, they all got on board and they were all excited. Hey, yeah. And then it kind of lost some momentum. People weren't talking about that, but now it's making a comeback. One of the people I interviewed for my summit, for the lung summit this past year, Thomas Levy, he was talking about making sure that you use hydrogen peroxide, rinse your mouth out with hydrogen peroxide to kill any of that bad bacteria. And then I remember, kind of tie it together, I remember gosh, it's been at least 25 years ago, studying with people who were, you know, would reference Hal Huggins, who wrote the book all about mercury toxicity. Mm-hmm. And in our medical practice, when I had my medical practice, we had a very difficult time referring people out. We would do chelation. We'd do a challenge IV test to see if they had heavy metals. And so many of them had mercury or lead. And we had the most difficult time finding any dentist here in Birmingham, Alabama, that knew how to do that protocol and really knew how to take it out. That's changed. There's two or three of them here now, but there's still not a lot. So we still got a lot of work to do to get that message out, don't we?
Yes, we do.
You know, and I think that sometimes people just run, they hear something about that, they go take it out, and it's very expensive, you know, and it's not very much fun. I've had mine taken out, but you really need to be careful about who you go see, and they do it the right way. They put the rubber dam in, they load you up on vitamin C prior to having it done. I mean, there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it.
Yes. And
yeah,
you can go to the IAOMT, and that's a place to start, someone who's smart certified. But even, you know, it's just like with anything, there are fantastic biological dentists, and there are those that kind of get it, kind of don't get it. And so you really have to do your due diligence and make sure the person you're working with really understands, because yes, the bacteria is so important, but for instance, root canals, a biological dentist that's going to do a root canal is not really a biological dentist. And so, and it just keeps changing. I remember being in Switzerland, oh my gosh, like in the early 2000s, years and years ago, and they had just taught us, we were in a classroom there at the clinic, and they had just taught us that titanium implants were almost as toxic, if not more toxic
than
mercury.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were all like, oh my God, great. And then they were like, yeah, but you can't get them in the States. And now you can. Now ceramic and zirconia implants mm-hmm. are available. But even within the ceramic zirconia, there are good ones, there are better ones. There are certain ones that work better for certain teeth. And so you can really go deep, deep down the rabbit hole. And so you just want to make sure that you're finding someone who really understands it, because it is quite prolific. And I'm a physician, so I can't tell you necessarily which ceramic implant to use for which tooth, but I can tell you, you know, which dentists I like and who will know what and what's important yeah. and so forth. And so it is a huge thing.
So someone has had a root canal, they have that in their history. What do you share with them to help them overcome that? What are some of the steps they can take to help with that? Is that they have to go to a biological dentist and that has to be dealt with them, or are there some things that they can do or some things that you can share with them over the counter they can do?
So if you've had a root canal, you have to first remember, and I mentioned energy, and so you have to remember that each tooth has a acupuncture meridian running through it, and so there is a connection, and we see it, and especially correlation with cancer and or colon issues or lung issues. And so if you have a root canal, one of the things that I do for my patients is I run computerized regulation thermography scans on them. And this is a test of the autonomic nervous system of regulation. And so regulation is how are the organs, how is the nervous system regulating, responding? And so this is something that if you're not regulating properly, you're going to be marching down the pathway towards pathology, towards seeing enzymatic levels go up in the blood work, towards seeing things on an X-ray or an MRI, where in regulation, we can catch it before because it's starting to deteriorate. And so I do testing on all the teeth, and I can see, especially if someone comes in and has a root canal, I can see, okay, this is regulating, so that's good, but let's see what tooth it's connected to. Let's see what you're dealing with. Let's see what your family history is or your genetics may predispose you to. Let's go have a cone beam, which is a 3D scan, so we can really take a deep look and see, because we know there's infection there. There's always infection. And so from my training in Europe, you pull the root canal tooth. You don't leave a dead organ, which is tooth is an organ. you don't leave a dead organ in your body ever. And we tend to think the teeth aren't organs, but they are. And so you pull it and you have it pulled properly and you have it with the periodontal ligament being attended to, and it's cleaned out with ozone and homeopathic remedies. And then you have to do something about putting in a ceramic implant. And so depending on the tooth, like I had a tooth that needed a root canal and I pulled it, and it's been a few years. And I don't really need the tooth for biting. So we're watching to make sure like my teeth aren't collapsing around it and it's not going to throw my bite off. And then I'm going to need to put something in there. So, some people will say like, if the tooth is not regulating, then I'm like, off to the dentist you go. Like, here's my proof and here's my case. If it is regulating, no one wants to go to the dentist and no one wants to have teeth pulled. Like, this is not fun.
No fun.
So it's a conversation. And in the end of the day, I do think it's better to get it out of there because I practice preventative medicine or from a preventative mindset. And I don't want to, you could say, well, it's regulating now and it's fine, so we'll just wait and see. And if you start to have lung issues or breast issues, then we'll pull it. But in my perspective, it's like, no, this should go on the to-do list of cleaning up your body and being preventative as we grow older. So always a unique conversation.
Yeah. Well, so mention that website again about where they could go to find a dentist who really is trained in this biological dentistry.
IAOMT. And then the Bioregulatory Medicine Institute, which I sit on the board of, and that's who I host my podcast for. Our website is BRMI.online. We're totally nonprofit and we have lots of information there. Like, if you want to spend the rest of your life reading about bioregulatory medicine, that's the place to do it. And we have lots of information there about dentistry and an interactive dental chart. So you can look and see, oh, I have a root canal, let's just say, in my front tooth. Oh, look, that's connected to the kidney bladder. Or, oh, where my wisdom teeth were pulled, because a lot of us have had our wisdom teeth pulled. And a lot of us have cavitations, which is an infection in the bone where it was pulled because it wasn't cleaned out properly. And the wisdom teeth are related to the small intestine and the heart. And so that can be a big contributing factor. We have an epidemic of intestinal issues and small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and our immune system, our Peyer's patches lie in our small intestines. So you can see how it all starts to click together. And when we're thinking about fibromyalgia, this diffuse muscle pain, and we have to look at the whole body, like it's all connected. And so muscle pain can simply be because the fascia is so polluted, the lymphatic system is so polluted that it's building up these toxins and it's affecting us and we're in chronic pain.
Let's talk about the fascia real quick. So I had Deanna Hansen was on here and we talked a good bit about fascia, and I'm trained in myofascial release by John Barnes. Mm-hmm. Some people may recognize him. If not, John Barnes, just Google John Barnes. I think it's mfr.org. I think.
A pleasure.
With people with fibro, they'll say, I can't handle massages too much. Or they'll say, oh, I just need a deep tissue massage to get all those knots out. And then they get a massage and then they can't get out of bed for 2 or 3 days. My fast release is a totally different dynamic. I mean, it's to me, it's the only massage I'd recommend, or lymphatic, and we'll talk about that. So let's talk about the fascia. So people who didn't see that other interview, what is the fascia? What's its responsibility? What does it do? Why is it important?
So the fascia is our antenna. It connects through sound and light, and it's the antenna from the external terrain to our internal terrain. And if an easy way to describe it is if you just think of Saran wrap. And it's like this Saran wrap that is wrapped around every organ. There's deep fascia, there's more superficial fascia, but it's wrapped. And so if your Saran wrap is really tight and really dirty, nothing moves. But if your Saran wrap kind of flowing, I think of like a curtain blowing in the wind, and you have this free flowing, flexible fascia, then you're going to have good communication between your internal and external environment. And I always like, if someone wants to get treated for their fascia and they say it's someone who is trained by John Barnes or the Upledger Institute, I'm like, yeah, yes, yes, go, yeah. go. That's good. And so I also like a trigger point work, because I think there can be a lot of underlying trigger points. And so by releasing them, and not with cortisone or shots like that, but by using homeopathic remedies, by using magnesium, that going in and releasing also helps to contribute to unraveling the fascia. And we need our fascia, we need our wrapping to be flowing. So if you're stuck, and it all, to me, the physical and the emotional, they are interchangeable. And so if you're stuck in your life, if you're not flowing in your life, it can show up as tight fascia. And if your fascia is tight because you have a lot of toxicity, then it can show up, you know, vice versa. So the mind affects the body affects the mind. They are inseparable. They are not to be thought of as one thing or the other. And so the lymphatic system, which I was saying is our garbage collector, also needs to be flowing. And so again, I go back to my thermography scan, because there's no other diagnostic tool that can measure the health of the lymphatic system. We don't have a blood test. We don't have a stool test. We can look at some symptoms. Do you have cellulite? Are you tired? Are you puffy? But the thermography machine that I use, which comes from Europe, actually test the lymphatic, and you can, and how I got so obsessed, I'll say is a good word, with the lymphatic system was because when I started running these scans, I saw that everyone, everyone had inflamed, congested lymph. And I was like, we don't have a lymphologist that we see, like we see the cardiologist or the gastroenterologist. And the lymph is such an important system in our body. We can't have health or heal without moving it. And so I can measure it. I can do things. I can remeasure it again and see it open up and see the system start to drain. And we have the glymphatics in our brain that we have to also pay attention to, which only drain during sleep. Right. And so we have to, you know, when I think about someone coming in, and that's often an issue with someone who's dealing with fibromyalgia, they're not sleeping. And so we have to make sleep a real priority so that we can start to heal and we can start to drain the brain, where a lot of these toxins like to go and cross the blood-brain barrier and become an issue.
So I did a presentation for Siobhan Sarna on her lymphatic summit, and I did a master PowerPoint presentation. I remember my opening line was, you've heard of the cardiovascular system. Everybody knows what that is. They can say, oh, yes, the heart. Heard about the musculoskeletal system. People can name a couple of bones and maybe a muscle or two. But if you mention lymphatic system, people just look at you like, what is that? And yet it's one of the most important systems. And as you mentioned, there's no lymphologist. It's not in the conversation. It's never brought up when you see your physician, unless you're seeing someone that's trained like Dr. Steeles is. It's something that I pay a lot of attention to, because it's, as you mentioned, it's the highway, that it's the garbage collector and the garbage highway to get stuff out. And with fibro, we're really looking at what can we do to lighten this toxic load that's creating a lot of this inflammation. Number one on the list to me is deep restorative sleep, for the very reason that you said. I mean, the brain literally shrinks so that the lymphatic system can do what it needs to do to pull these toxins out. But if you're not getting that deep restorative sleep, the body's never able to get those toxins, especially out of the brain, which can create all sorts of problems with neurotransmitters, brain chemicals being able to speak to one another or release messages. There's already a disconnect between the nervous system and the hormonal system in fibromyalgia. This just makes it worse, right? If we can't get that lymphatic system working, what are some of the things that people can do to help stimulate their own lymphatic system to work more effectively?
So one of my favorite toys that I have is the Flowpresso, which is a a compression wrapping system where it's kind of like a way to put yourself into parasympathetic, a way to heat up and get things moving. And by pressing, because we know the lymphatic system doesn't move unless we move it. So it's, you know, pressing like I'm doing, but it's all wrapped up. It's a nice thing to do for yourself. So if you have someone near you who offers that, you go check that out. But in your own home, sweating, so whether it be in a nice warm bath, and I love baths if someone's dealing with fibromyalgia, like a nice Epsom salt bath. Yeah. And you could take a nice Epsom salt bath. You can be drinking hot Achillea tea, which is yarrow, and that is a diaphoretic. So it helps to open up things and get you sweating. And then after the bath, you can kind of, I got a heavy sweater because it's cold here in Arizona today, but you can bundle up a few sweatshirts and go to bed and kind of just increase that sweating process. It's really important. It's kind of like, did I brush my teeth today? Did I have a bowel movement today? Did I sweat today? Mm-hmm. It should be something on our consciousness. I also love, love, love castor oil packs. I think they're one of the most profound treatments to help detox and move the lymphatic. And they are very inexpensive and they are a beautiful act of self-care to yourself. So that's certainly something you can be doing, making sure you're hydrated and flushing, making sure you're moving a vibration plate where you're shaking things. Just the simple act of walking and moving your body is super important. And so taking drainage remedies. So drainage remedies are part of European bioregulatory medicine, and they're different than taking something like milk thistle or tutka. They are complex homeopathic remedies, and they're vibrational as well as having physical constituents. And they go in and they drain the organs, they drain the lymphatic, they drain the milieu. And so combination of doing these drainage remedies, of maybe taking phytolacca or nice lymphatic herbs, and whether you're ingesting them or using them topically, of course you want to do that under someone's supervision because some of them can be toxic like phytolacca. But taking them, staying hydrated, doing the movement, using light beam generator or lymph star. I do color puncture for patients because that really drains the lymphatic system. So what my experience has been, because I know we all talk about dry skin brushing and jumping on a trampoline, and those are not bad things, but my experience is those are never enough. Like I never saw people doing that, move the dial on their therms when I was doing
It's an easy thing to do. And it's something you can, you know, people feel at least they're doing something proactive, but really I think the saunas and the castor oil pack to me are my two most favorite things. And getting in an Epsom salt bath, as you said, I think is really helpful. And anybody can do that. The saunas, people get really hung up on, does it need to be a dry sauna? Does it need to be infrared? Personally, it doesn't matter to me. If you're going to buy one, then infrared. But if you're going to the gym and all they have is a dry sauna, that's fine. And, you know, if you can do that 1 or 2 days a week to really open up, your lymphatic system, really get this drainage going, you're going to really benefit no matter which type of sauna. Castor oil packs, how do people use those? Can you give us a kind of a play-by-play? Because people get, castor oil, I don't know, you know, what is that? And they get all bogged down, and it's really not that complicated. It's very simple, actually.
And I'll answer that in a second. I just want to say, yes, I agree with the sauna. Like best case scenario, you purchase an infrared sauna for your house and you have it and it's fantastic. But if that's not a possibility right now and you belong to a local gym, yes, any sauna is better than no sauna. And then following it with a cold plunge, which is one of my favorite ways to do everything. I mean, not that cold plunging is like my favorite thing to do, but it's good for you. And so that's also going to really get in there and help reset your nervous system. So as far as castor oil packs, you heat the castor oil, you soak the wool flannel, you put it on the body part. So a lot of times we put it on the abdomen, we put it towards the right side, the lower rib cage where the liver and gallbladder are. I have people put it on their necks. There's so much lymphatic flow in here, under your arms, on your breasts. I mean, sometimes I'm just like, you need to be a castor oil mummy, you know, and depending upon how big someone is, when you unfold it, you know, I'm little. So like, you know, one pack covers a lot of ground on me. Sometimes you need two packs if you're longer. So, and then you cover it with, I like to use parchment paper. It used to be plastic. Mm-hmm. Plastic is toxic.
Yeah, I did not.
And then you put a hot water bottle, or if you can find a low EMF dry heating pad, and then you just sit with it on you for 45 minutes. And it was a channeled therapy from Edgar Cayce. So you can pop in Edgar Cayce and read all about him. And he said to do it four nights on, three nights off. And so I trust the source, and that's how I do it. And sometimes my patients are kicking and screaming, and they're like, ah, out of time, it's too messy. But then you really got to take a look at, what do you have time for? And what do you mean too messy? And where does nurturing yourself, where does slowing down, where does looking at where pain, and what does that mean to you, and how are you interacting with it? And so then that gets into one of my favorite forms of medicine and things to pay attention to, which is mindfulness. And what are you paying attention to? And so we often have patients do food diaries, but I like to have people do like activity, daily life diary, because you don't have time to do 45 minutes of something that is going to give you great benefits, but add up all the time that you spent scrolling or mindlessly doing something. Or, and I'm not saying we shouldn't have mindless time, because we need that time. We need time to just kind of space out and daydream. But I was just talking about this to my son last night, who's also a physician, and like, we can all do better in how we manage our time. And when I say manage our time, I don't mean 6 o'clock, I wake up and I meditate. 6:15, I'm doing my cold plunge. 6:30, I'm looking at the sun. 6:45, I'm doing my meditating, journaling. And because then we're overscheduled, and then these things just come, okay, I'm just going to check this off again. I'm going to just check this off. So we want to have this really nice balance of doing things that are nurturing us, but giving ourselves space to really be present. And so even with pain, which I understand and have experienced, and it is not fun, but if we can change our relationship to pain, if we can start to inquire, communicate, dialogue with the pain, if we can start to breathe into the pain. And so sometimes we teach what we need, right? We become doctors because we need things ourselves. And so this is something I have worked a lot with, because the initial reaction when we have pain is to contract and to complain and to start, oh, this pain. Oh my God, it hurts so bad. What can I do to get rid of it? Instead of breathing and exploring and inquiring and starting to just the simple act of, and it's simple, but it's not simple. It takes time to build the mindfulness muscle and the inquiry muscle, but exploring, is there a color to this pain? Does it have boundaries? Is it sharp? What does it feel like? When we start to inquire, you'll notice that the pain starts to shift. And so this is just another, and I'm not giving it justice. I know we're almost done here, but I just wanted to put it out there, because it is such an important piece that we have to tie in. And so healing is complex. It's multifactorial. It is a commitment. To me, if you're in a physical body, it's something that's always in process, and it ebbs and flows. So sometimes we have healing when our body calls to us, when our body's in a lot of pain. It's more prevalent, and it's something that has to take center stage. And sometimes when we're not there, it can step back a little. But the problem is, we don't want to step back entirely. We always want to be thinking about our healing and how are we pushing the dial forward for good health and a good aging process. And so, and we didn't even cover hormones and hormone, you know, everyone knows me from hormones. And
you know, there's just, it's multifaceted. That's what makes fibromyalgia so difficult. And really, I think the only really long-term success that would guarantee success, I should, or should make it more possible to have success, because there's no guarantees in medicine, but is to test and to see where you're broken down, because this is going to be more than one thing. But the things that we're sharing today is everybody should be doing. You should be taking care of your oral cavity. You should be doing that. You should be making sure your lymphatic flow is unstuck and doing what it should be doing, which is helping you to detox. And then I think everybody can benefit from realizing that we are what we think about. And so many of us get caught in the maze of this negative thinking. And you get caught in a maze of you're just thinking about your condition or the pain. You focus on the pain. And we've had people come on here talking about how cells wired together fire together. And you set up this pattern where you just, you're so focused on the pain. That's what you're focused on. And it's like this recording that just plays over and over and over again. At some point, though, if you start to apply some of this mindfulness thinking and these relaxation techniques, you can see that sometimes it will help you pull the needle off the old LP and get it so it's out of the groove. It's not going over and over again. And so I really do think that part of that is acknowledging what is happening and realizing this is a warning sign and it's trying to get your attention. But by focusing on that and letting your body know it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. That's one big step, I think, of getting out of the maze, just acknowledging that you're in the maze, you're in this thinking, which I totally understand. It's not to make anybody feel bad. I mean, when you feel bad, it's hard to think positive. It's hard to think of your pain as being an opportunity for you to grow, maybe, you know, whether spiritually or you know, in your spiritual journey, but it is. I mean, it's an opportunity if you treat it that way.
Yeah. So for anyone listening, like, don't be harsh on yourself. If you if you had a minute where you just were able to like breathe into it, 1 minute, like it takes time. It's very easy to sit here and say, oh, breathe into your pain and talk to your pain. It's another thing to actually do it. And so give yourself grace, give yourself space to, even if it's not a minute, even if it's 5 seconds, that's 5 seconds that you did that. And so we need to be kind and gentle with ourselves. And it is so multifactorial. I find all of disease processes or conditions are multifactorial, and what works for someone else may not work for you. And there are people who just with the power of mind overcome their pain. And there's other people who rebalance their thyroid, because that's something I see always with a fibromyalgia condition going on. I was taught that in medical school, and that's like stuck in my head. Always check the T3 and the reverse T3. And I find it time and time again. Yeah. And so we never know. That's why it's so important to work with a doctor who's so multifactorial, or to have a team, so that you're addressing the mind, the physical, what's going in your body, the viruses. It's always so interesting, because a mainstream doctor says, nothing to do, here's an antidepressant, right? Or here's some pain meds. And from our perspectives, it's like, oh my goodness, where do we start? There's so many different ways to help you, and there's so many things we're going to uncover. And so it becomes this journey of really helping your body to get back in balance.
Right. And there's some common steps that really have been shown to be helpful across the board with those with fibromyalgia. And yet everybody's fibromyalgia is different. You know, just because you got the name fibromyalgia doesn't mean you're going to be exactly like the next person. And so there are some steps, and we've talked about some of those today. And really, I would discourage you from going out and just getting your amalgams pulled without working with somebody. I see people who spend thousands and thousands of dollars, go off on tangents, doing all this crazy stuff, chelation and all these detox programs. And there's a time and a place for that, but make sure at the end of the day, is that really going to move the needle where you want it to where you're really going to be able to tell, have dramatic improvement in your symptoms, not just a little bit here or a little bit there. I want to make sure we're going to run out of time. So make sure, tell us the website, because I want people to reach out. You got so much information on your website and a lot of free resources. Where do they need to go to learn more about European biological medicine and some of the things that you've talked about?
Yeah, and I just wanted, as you were saying that, you want to be working with a physician who's like your quarterback, so that you're ready, you know that you're draining, you know your emunctories are open, so then you get the mercury removed. Because just like what right. you said, it's like right. you want to have a system, you want to have someone quarterbacking for you, because it breaks my heart when someone's coming in and spend thousands of dollars and it's like, oh no, that wasn't the right step in the right place. Yeah. So it's super, super important to get that support. Yeah. As far as finding me, my website is Dr. Stills, very simple, drstills.com. I do, again, want to say brmi.online if you are interested in lots of free resources about everything bioregulatory medicine. I also host the Science of Self-Healing podcast for the Bioregulatory yeah. Medicine Institute. So I have lots of, I just hit my 100th episode. Great. So by the time it airs, I'll be a bit over that. And so I've got lots of amazing interviews on there. You can go as deep down the rabbit hole as you would like. So
yeah, and I've gotten to listen to a few of those and they're really good, really well done. So, well, Sharon, thank you so much, Dr. Stills. Thank you for being a part of the summit and really enjoyed this conversation. I hope folks will check out your website and check out some of what you mentioned today. I think you'll find it beneficial. And again, these are just some steps you can take to help you in your quest to feel good again.
Thank you. Nice to be here.